Say it. Say it.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone.
Mean it. Say it again.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone.
No, not sexy, like real.
The Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone.
Nailed it.
Oh boy.
What's going on, buddy?
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kyle.
Never started with just a hi, Dave, I don't think.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
What are you doing, man?
Nothing. It's great that, you know, nothing bad's happened in the world in the last week. It's just so cool.
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine and nothing bad's happened. So it's what great news.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, of course, that's not the truth, but I have ignored a lot of it. I was getting a little, outrage fatigue.
Yeah, and, you know, that happens.
You're just like, all right, well, me just sitting here getting mad and not doing anything isn't helping. So maybe taking a few steps back and strategizing where and how the help would be best placed is a better move. But we came up to, we're in Portland, Oregon right now.
Okay.
And not in the city of Portland. Portland's on pretty big lockdown. Well, I don't know. You know, I just saw there's some protests. I'm like, I'm glad they're happening. I'm not gonna read more about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is part of the problem.
Portland's always been real politically active with the protest type of stuff.
Yeah, they get in it. We're just outside of Portland, actually. So kind of just chilling out and not enjoying not being in the city.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Before we get into everything, I was trying to think about not to be insensitive to the issues of the world, but other issues of the world, which are the inevitable COVID spikes after these protests.
Yep.
And the further postponement of more work and wondering what venues will still exist when we can go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that was on my mind a little bit. I was starting to look at different living options. So I was looking. I heard you lived in a van. Is that true?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. The rumors are true.
Is that the first 2.5 years of our podcast? Is that part still relevant?
Former van dweller. All totaled 4 years in the van. 2.5 years straight. 3 different stints. 2.5 years. Then about another 6 months. And then on a third stint, about another year. So.
Well, what I've realized now, Dave, is I don't believe you. Because as I've looked online, you can't have lived in a van unless you had a YouTube channel.
That's true. Yeah. It's not legit.
Yeah. I was looking at how touring's going to change in the future. And I'm like, all right, maybe start looking at my own, part of it because, I never tour. I've done, month and weeks and stuff in trucks or, stuff like that. More camping, not living, but thing like, going into hotels, different hotels every time and different, thinking about that with the COVID and the future and also because traveling in a van is cool. But man, these YouTube people, I'm like, did they want to do this or did they just want YouTube money?
Yeah, that's a good question. Some people seem to be doing the van life just for the hashtag and for the gram.
Yeah, I feel like they just spend most, they're either hiking and looking like attractive people or they're editing videos.
Yeah,
to make sure that the van life looks like this room, and then I saw one video of some gal who did it. She's like, "Here's how it really is. It all sucks. You start doing stuff just because you know you have to make a video because now that's your source of income." I'm like, "Oh yeah, this is what happens when you try to capitalize on your entire lifestyle." sometimes even with being a comedian, you keep that separate from your life, or some people do. Some people, their whole thing is showing up on Instagram every day and being a personality all the time. It's like, nah, I'll just do the jokes and then do the show.
Yeah.
And then that's like, I like that there's privacy. I mean, then when we do this, this is fun and other things, but to realize you got to like put your whole life on display for income. And then when you are freaked out by that, where does your income from? What a horrifying existence you've made for yourself.
Yeah, that's got to be exhausting to profit off your entire lifestyle.
Yeah, your whole existence is to make money off your off your lifestyle. Like, what? Says this gal that way. This video was pretty eye opening. It's like, yeah, they don't show you how it's, you know, that you get people with their $80,000 custom Sprinter vans that are all decked out in twee little live, laugh, luff sayings, and you know, and it's all whimsical. It's like, no, if you're doing true van, like, not that she said true van life, but no, some people are doing it because they can't afford a home or an apartment or this or that. They're not in that kind of van. They're in this, and they're freezing trying to make food in the morning, and they're trying to find a place to take a shit. Like, she was very adamant. Like, and then, yeah, people are just doing this to make a channel. And then you don't want to do that channel. You just want to live. Like, you're not having the experience. You're not enjoying nature to enjoy it. You're enjoying it because, like, oh, I got to get a picture of it. I got to get a video of it. And I've always, that's been my problem the whole time. It's like, even especially with, like, comedians going, like, and making fun of everything right away, like, always being on. It's like, no, have the experience. And then process that into comedy later, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, I was going to hit you up about some advice on that, if it's a worthwhile
you thing. Really considering getting a van?
Yeah, but see, I wouldn't do, I'm not trying to make a channel.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about in terms of touring.
Mm-hmm. What are you looking at?
Oh, I'd be one of those assholes with the real nice Sprinter van.
Yeah, the Sprinter van is the way I would go. If I had to do it over again, or if I had the money back when I was doing it, I would definitely look for a Sprinter van. I went the Ford Econoline route.
You were bare minimum.
Only because that's all I could afford. I bought, let's see, I started living in the van in early 2012, and I bought a 05 Ford E150, just the first model.
Seven-year-old, how many miles?
I think when I bought it, it only had about 60,000.
Okay, not too bad.
So, and it was just a bare-bones white cargo van.
Yeah.
And I, having very little construction knowledge, I've done blue collar work my whole life. I've done, you know, landscaping. I've talked about that. I did plumbing, things like that. But as far as like actual carpentry, I have almost no skills, but just, taught myself how to convert it, on a real small budget. I think I probably spent $600 in materials and, just learned how to, you know, carpet the bottom and carpet the walls and build a little. I built my own little bed frame. Well, and
I saw you. You were cutting a mattress in half, and you included your hand in part of that process. I was in Atlanta when you were like bandaged up, like van's almost ready.
Oh yeah, cut my hand real bad. I had to. And to, I've told the story before, but I wanted my bed to lie widthwise across the wheel wells for better spatial economy.
Yeah.
If I'd have gone north south, it would have probably been a little more comfortable, but it would have taken up too much space. So I went east west, and the problem with that is any mattress is about I'm trying to think, 75 inches is your standard length of a mattress, regardless of the width, regardless if it's a twin or a queen or a king. Most mattresses are 75 inches long, and the width of my van was 70 inches. So I literally sawed 5 inches off. I just literally sawed with a handsaw.
Yeah, you weren't getting like memory foam or anything. You just cut through some springs, coil springs.
Get the wire cutters, cut the springs, saw through the foam and all that. And then I just put a heavy duty trash bag over the wound, if you will, and duct taped it up tight, and then put a sheet over it, a fitted sheet over it, and boom, I had my 70 inch mattress that could fit widthwise across the wheel wells. So did that, built a little bed frame, carpeted, built some panels for the ceiling and the floor and the walls, and wrapped those in Berber carpet, and screwed those to the walls and to the ceiling, and boom, there we go. Real bare bones operation.
But yeah, you didn't have
served its purpose.
You didn't have electric or water or anything like a camper. Because I see all these people, and it's all about they build it out themselves. And I was like, man, I'm not going to video it for a YouTube. And I would just want, I wouldn't want I want this because it'll be a tool. I don't want the project to prove to myself I can do it. So I will let somebody else wire it up with, you know, what do they call it? Shore power, just so it's done right. But the idea of like, all right, touring is like, you know, you live on the West Coast, you got 2 or 3 days to get to your first date. But instead of having to like, all right, I got to make sure I can pack, stack every day, every day together for 10 days or 2 weeks. Like, no, we can have a day off because we'll have our hotel on wheels. We'll have a mini tour bus. So I'm toying with the idea, but I'm wondering, like, what do I want? What's important to me? Because I want to have the bikes in it. You know, one thing, like, get to a town and have something to pedal around town and check stuff out. So you're not having to drive to each place. You just park it and, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I have mountain bikes, I'm like, oh, there's going to be all these cool places to go ride mountain bikes, and I want to do that. So I want to have those in there, but I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to want to have a shower in it or some capability of at least hosing off.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It's getting – I went down the rabbit hole for that today, and I don't know if you – like, what was the thing you wished you had the most, like toilet or shower or
– Yeah, but either one of those. Yeah, toilet. I had no water. No electric, no gas.
Like gym membership, probably, you can handle it. Handles the showers.
Yeah, yeah. The gym membership came in handy in that regard. So yeah, probably the number one thing would be a toilet because it's, you know, showers. You can control when and where you take a shower, but you can't always control your colon. So
that was my thing. And like they got those little Nature's Head, like little composting ones, which mean, I mean, you're basically just giving yourself a litter box. Like you just poop in it and you got to dump out your own poop. I wouldn't rely on it, but it would be nice to have like, oh,
yeah,
no, like emergency driving around. It's like, no, you can do this if you need to. But
yeah.
And they got that like little exterior hose to shower, but I'm like, imagine being like a cold, rainy day. Like I'm thinking after bike rides, you're in a cold, rainy area, and then you got a hose off in the parking lot. Might be kind of gnarly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have no interest in going back to the van dwelling lifestyle, but I still, I daydream about getting a nice van as a touring vehicle. I mean, they're great to tour in, other than the gas mileage.
Yeah, I mean, I'd still have an apartment. Yeah, I was looking at diesel. Diesel is like 22 miles a gallon. I'm like, that's better than the Jeep is. But anyway, I guess I'm kind of burying the lead here. Hey, remember last week I told everybody you were a cop? Hey, what about the van, though? The van thing was cool when you did that, Dave.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do remember that.
I mean, obviously we got a lot more to talk about with that, but we can discuss. Yeah. Yeah, anybody see a goblin or something this week? Man, we really aren't the podcast we promised we were going to be when it started.
Well, I recorded an episode of Stoneberg's earlier today, and we were talking about that. And yeah, the Boogie Monster has definitely pivoted a little bit, but. And I may have mentioned this on this show before, but it just feels weird with everything that's going on to just talk about the Loch Ness Monster right now. Like, and I know that that could be a nice break and a nice palate cleanser. But yeah, it just feels weird to talk about our normal boogie stuff right now. And I definitely want to, and sooner than later, transition back into our original format. But, you know, I know some people might be disappointed that, you know, our format's changed, but dude, look what's going on in the world. It's hard to ignore it.
But it's kind of like, I mean, things are crossing over. More people believe in conspiracy theories, which you'd think would be fun, but it's dangerous because, like, we believe them and it's we talk about them, but then which ones are, you know, to the best of my knowledge, like the thing about the Panama Papers being like, hey, we're exposing how all these world leaders are laundering money and maintaining the wealth of the richest while the poor get poorer. Like, mm-hmm. oh, that's real. That's not even a, that's, yeah. that is like, I wouldn't say like full New World Order because you use that terms, but like, no, that's the rich hoarding wealth and maintaining power and oppressing people. And what do they use to oppress people? I don't know. Maybe things like militaries and police forces, which, oh shit, what's going on now? Oh, all these, you know, police officers like, well, we're just being used to keep down, you know, be systematic racism, which, and everybody is, or I can't speak for everybody, but I think a lot of people are like, yeah, this isn't some liberal white guilt for me to start learning about real racism and what it means and how it's, you know, it's rooted in who has the power, and it's a class issue that has mm-hmm. the racial component to it. Like, I still go back to that weird meth addict when I was working at the gas station, when he just came in, he's like, see, man, this is why we're never going to have health care, because if the poor people could feel better, that's when the revolution happens, because they're going to be like, oh, now I feel good. Fuck these people. Let's get them. And like, and then he just walked out into the night all tweaking out. But I'm like, that was, yes. Oh, yeah, yes, you're right. That's why. Then you don't want poor people to be able to be strong and healthy. They'll fucking storm the gates of every mansion you got. So it is kind of tying into it, this what's going on now.
Yeah.
In a bit of a roundabout way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, and I don't have all the facts enough to even converse on it, but the stuff that we've seen in the last few weeks with all these protests, you know, oh, there's a pallet of bricks that just showed up on the corner that wasn't there yesterday. Yeah. Who put them there? And, oh, look, it's what do they call it? A agent provocateur. Undercover cop is smashing windows and creating havoc. And, yeah. I mean, it's happening right in front of our eyes.
Well, the videos now, of the police just, like, knifing tires on parked cars. I'm like, well, yeah. I do need to know some that? Context.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know some context about that, but...
I mean, every day, it's something new. Every day, there's a new video of police brutality, either something that happened in the past that's just now surfacing, or things that are happening in real time, just like what happened this weekend in Atlanta. I don't know if you heard about that. Another unarmed black man shot, Rashard Brooks. And, of course, what I was talking about, the analogy I made with the George Floyd thing, is there was, in my opinion, and most reasonable people's opinion, absolutely zero gray area in that case. There's definitely a gray area in the Rashard Brooks case that happened in Atlanta. I don't know if you've seen there's multiple videos of it. Guy was asleep in a Wendy's parking lot. Cops show up. I guess they talk to him for like 15, 20 minutes trying to figure out if he's intoxicated. I don't know if he refused a field sobriety test or whatever. One thing leads to another. They try to arrest him. There's a scrap. Two on one, dude grabs one of the cops tasers and starts running, and they give chase. And while he's running, yes, he turns around. It looks like he turns around and tries to shoot the taser back at the cop, and they shoot him with their real gun and kill him. That's a gray area. Me personally, as a former cop, I know it sounds, that's where, from my perspective, from my experience, that's a classic case of maybe the cop's ego getting in the way. And of course, the cop's attorneys can articulate that, well, had he shot the cop with a taser, he could have then doubled back and grabbed his gun and killed the cop. I get that, although there was two on one. Yeah. You know, the cop had a partner. But me personally, if that were to happen, you know, your instinct is to give chase. But then if you see that he's got your taser or your buddy's taser, and then you feel like you're in danger, then I'm terminating that chase. I'm backing off. Hey, you run off into the woods, do whatever you got. Guess what? We've got your car and we've got your license plate. And we got your driver's license. We know who you are. They detained him for 15 or 20 minutes. In that case, you go issue a warrant. You take out a warrant on the guy, and the next interaction he ever has with the cop, he's going to get arrested for fleeing or DUI or whatever the original charges were. But to real gun.
Is there a thought there like, well, now he has one weapon and we have to go... And that doesn't just this one's cloudy, and I can't say I have a strong opinion on this one because I would think exactly that I could tase the cop then get the gun
I don't know what
you fought the cops and got one of their weapons. It's not as cut and dry as the George Foreman.
Yeah. Yeah, of course it's not. That's what I'm saying. And I'm, you know, I'm not leaning one way or the other. I mean, well, if I'm leaning one way, like I said, I would have not chased the guy, let him have my taser, run off into the woods, and I'll take a warrant out for you, and eventually we'll get you. But my point is, I don't know, I'm not up to date with what the laws are now, but when I was policing, there was the only time that you could shoot, use deadly force on somebody who's running away is they called it if they were committing a forcible felony, meaning if that guy had a shotgun and he's running away from the cop, but he's already killed somebody or threatened somebody.
Yeah.
He's got a shotgun, he's got a gun, whatever, and he's running into a preschool or an elementary school. Then you can, that's the, at least that's how I was trained. The only time you can use deadly force when someone who's running away from you mm-hmm. is if you can articulate that they were running towards another potential dangerous situation.
But isn't that the thought of they're getting away from you? That could just be anything. You make, they could be off to cause any kind of harm because they got away from you.
Well, but you can't, the only way you can justify it or articulate it is if, you know that they have a weapon and you know that they have intent to doing harm to someone else that they're running towards, even though they're running away from you. My point is, this guy didn't have, to my knowledge, they didn't find any actual firearms on him. I mean, granted, he fought with them and took their taser, but I don't know, man. It's, if you're going to shoot somebody, if you're going to use deadly force on someone who's running away from you, man, you got to really articulate why that's justified. And I don't know that this guy just running away because he has their taser gun. Granted, he did turn around and point it at him. And that, well, that's the whole problem with all of this. That's the whole problem with all this. And this is something I didn't, this is a point I didn't make last week, but, and this isn't justifying any one side or the other, but in the moment, these cops have a split second to make a life and death decision. And then we have weeks and months and years to sit around and analyze and second guess.
Yeah.
So, and again, not justifying these cops or any cops that use deadly force unjustly, but it's, you have to remember that they're making split second life and death decisions that we have months to sit around and put under the microscope. And that's why it's a tough fucking gig.
Well, I was reading about, some wormhole rabbit hole I went down, but people with concealed carry permits that got rid of it because they're like, it changed every situation they went into.
Yep.
Being like, well, if something happens, I have this. Why will I use it? And it just put a lens on everything they were doing. They're like, it gave me too much anxiety to be out in the world knowing I had that with me if something had to happen. So. Then, you know, like you said, every day you clocked in, it was that was the attitude of like, and it's, you know, and it's not like if something, it's like something's going to go down. You're a police officer. Something's going to happen.
Yeah. Something will go down.
You have to be the janitor for everybody's problem out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, as we were saying, that's the argument about the defund the police. It's like, it's not that there's no police. It's just take some of that budget and put it into the social programs that, so you don't have to be called for every single thing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, going back to this Atlanta case, if I was one of those officers or the officer that shot and killed the guy, man, you got to be thinking about what's going on in the world. And yeah, I know he stole someone's taser, but he ran away from you with everything that's going on, you know, weeks after the George Floyd thing. If that were me, hey, have fun with that taser, buddy. Guess what? We're taking out a warrant tonight. We got your license. We know who you are. Mm-hmm. Like, I would not have given chase on that guy. If I knew that my only recourse in that officer's mind was to shoot him in the back. Like, ugh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, if you point something at a cop, that's a weapon, though. If that's what, I did not read these police reports. I don't know the way. Like I said, I was like, "Oh, everything's a mess." Okay.
Yeah,
gonna go sit in the
woods.
That's
a tough one. And you know, cops deal with that shit every night, and you know, some of them make poor decisions. poor decisions. That could be a good segue.
Hey man. There's other things you want to get to. I will say this. I'm laughing about this whole, you know, people getting angry about the Confederate flag and the statues coming down. Like, well, you can't just erase history. Like, I try to listen. You know, I'll dabble in, like, whatever conspiracy podcasts are out there. Just like, all right, see what's going on. But I listen to one. I try to listen to one today. It's Michael Deacon program. And what a fucking turd. Because it was him, and he had, like, a guy who was a temporary singer for the Misfits on it. So, you know, some, you know, New Jersey hard-headed putts. But, like, just, like, full right-wing conspiracy. Like, and these people want to tear down the state. They're erasing history. It's like, no, you fucking retard. It's still in the books.
Mm-hmm.
You could read the books. I see why you're angry that the statue's going away, because you don't want to read the books. But they're like, this is the same as book burning. No, it's not. You can't change the history. It happened. It's written down. You just don't have to celebrate the horrible parts of it.
Yeah.
You don't get to, maybe we're just getting rid of the trophies because you fucking lost. That's all it is. These people, look, they're erasing history. It's in books, you morons.
Well, the rebel flag, if your symbol of heritage doubles as someone else's symbol of hatred and oppression and pain, find a new fucking symbol to celebrate your heritage.
Yeah, is that all you got down there? Is that the only thing in the South is the flag? That's the only thing you could say to be like, hey, man, I'm from down here. Cool. Somebody design a new flag.
Well, and the irony, too, of a lot of the people that have a problem with Colin Kaepernick taking a knee during the national anthem are proudly waving the Confederate flag. What's more anti-American than a flag that represents a group that waged war against America?
We tried and lost.
I don't buy into that fucking rebel flag.
I could see the touchiness of it. Because nobody, it's just regional pride for these. That's the defense, right? That's the defense, is that it's just regional pride. We're from here. Well, this is the flag that represents it. It didn't represent the war as much as, like, oh, it's this group of states and this kind of culture that goes with the South. Well, guess what? Part of that culture was this horrible thing.
Yep.
And the people that were, you know, the victims of that and the relatives of those victims, like, hey, man, maybe you don't need to wave the flag about, because it kind of sucked for a lot of us.
Yeah. Yeah, it causes a lot of bad memories for a lot of folks. And I don't know if this is an accurate or fair analogy, but I'm sure there are certain German people that are proud of their heritage and ashamed of what the Germans did, you know, in the early 20th century. But are German people hanging on to their Nazi flags just because, oh, it's my German heritage? No. I mean, I don't know if they are or not, but if they are, that's still a shitty argument.
Some of them are.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, it seems cut and dry to me. I could see the offense. like you're asking somebody that never had an association of hate with that symbol to now view it as such and get rid of it from, like, their whole life. It's not an easy thing. I understand that. It's not like, oh, cool, this thing that has been hanging up in my dad's garage, my granddad's garage, and even though I know we were never racist, and even maybe, black people were friends with him and they just saw it, but now it's like, oh, yeah, remember how it kind of means this, and it's actually shitty? Maybe we gotta move forward. It's not easy. Growth is not comfortable. I'm trying to think of an example of something that, like, I, you know, maybe associated with, you know, nothing terrible, but then as you grow up, you're like, oh, yeah, maybe that's, like, not good. I'm trying to think of, like, what kind of racist thing, which I'm sure there's plenty of it.
Well, not even the historical context, but even in present day, the rebel flag has been somewhat co-opted by either, you know, the Klan, neo-Nazis, whoever. Like,
I mean, shitbirds in the north flying it. So, like, what does that mean, like, to you, though?
As soon as the Klan or the neo-Nazis, as soon as they adopt it, then, okay, maybe I'll celebrate my heritage with some other type of symbol.
Well, that's where I get mad, because there's like that Boogaloo movement or something, which is supposed to be some new all right. And like part of the thing is Hawaiian shirts. Like, fuck you guys. Mm-hmm. You do not get through in Hawaiian shirts.
I thought about you when I first heard about that.
Hell.
Because your affinity for Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah. No, fuck you guys.
Those fucking dorks.
Fuck you guys. Fuck you losers and your fucking dumbasses.
Oh boy.
I gotta stop I told you I'm like laying in bed with the mic stand over me, but the way I'm laying, it's pushing the mattress out on the thing. I gotta push it up. Hold on.
You keep talking, Dave. I just gotta move.
Yeah, I'm gonna take a sip of my beverage here.
Hey everybody, faithful podcast listeners, my name is Kyle. I'm the host of Never Seen It. It is a podcast where I have comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we read those scripts in studio. So maybe someone's never seen Game of Thrones, or someone's never seen Shawshank Redemption. They write a script of what they think that movie or TV show is, and we read it in studio. And then we play some fun games. My dad gets involved. It's a really good time. I think if you love movies, if you love TV shows, but maybe you're not caught up on everything that's ever been made in the entire history of the world, this podcast is for you. It's called Never Seen It. I think you're going to love it. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. Check it out.
Shout out to, I forgot who gave me this recipe when I was talking about White Russians either last week or the week before. But I replaced the vodka with bourbon. So I got a little half and half, a little Kahlua, a little bourbon, but then I throw in a shot of Coca-Cola, and it makes it taste like a damn chocolate soda, the old school fountain sodas.
Bourbon? You're drinking bourbon and cream?
Yeah, man. Well, okay, it's the concept of the White Russian, which is what? Vodka, Kahlua, and cream. But I substituted the vodka with bourbon, and that's delicious. But then someone told me, they sent me a recipe, I forgot the name of this drink, but they were like, hey, take it one step further and throw a little splash of Coca-Cola in there. And, oh boy, it's a good time.
All right, I'm back.
It sounds good, but it also sounds like
when an alcoholic's body is shutting down, so they have to just augment the alcohol in order to consume it. I'm going to put the cream in there for the ulcer, and then I need the soda pop for the gastro. And
if you drink the mouthwash real fast, it doesn't taste that bad.
Oh, Jesus. That's part of you know, our buddy Sam Talent's book that's out, Running the Light, about the old booze bag road comic being in a dry town on a Sunday, putting down some mouthwash just to get rid of the shakes. Oh, Jesus.
I'm drinking this
bunch of Portland beers up here, man. Not even the craft beers, but just like good old session
beer. Oh, yeah.
It's a Mexican style session beer, and at a habanero, mango habanero cider.
Okay.
That was good. Spicy kind of cider. But I'm sorry, Dave. I stepped on. You wanted to talk about making mistakes.
Oh.
And how that happens sometimes.
Man, I'll be all right.
As a police officer. Is that something? Is there something you wanted to bring up?
Oh, fuck it. Let's get into it, man.
Oh, fuck it, man. Let's party.
Honestly, dude, I've been dreading this. This is not something I wanted to talk about. But I feel obligated. If I'm going to give, I don't need to just give part of the story. I should give the whole story. And last week was big enough for me.
Yeah.
And by the way, I want zero. I don't want sympathy. This isn't woe is me. But no, it's not just what you heard last week is not an easy thing for me to talk about. Just because, and I explained it last week, all this going on in the world. Cops have never had a worse reputation, and there's never been a worse stigma to being either a cop or a former cop than there is now. But because of that, I felt obligated to finally open up about the little secret that I've been keeping on this podcast and talk about being a former cop. And oh boy, let's go ahead and finish the story, shall we?
Well, and for, and like we'll say, you're not, it's not defense or criticism either. It's just, you're just telling your story. So it's not, it's, there's no right or wrong. It's just what, it's what happened. So this is your experience, man. I know I'm telling you, I don't think you should feel bad about it. I think you being honest about your experience is actually helping people maybe understand a larger scope than previous. Okay. So I think what you're doing is good. If my dumb encouragement helps for anything.
Well, all right, let's get into it. And again, this is not something I ever wanted to talk about, and definitely not proud of it, but here's the fucking story. I was a cop for just over 4 years, and in all honesty, I sleep well at night knowing that I was a good cop, and I tried my best to treat people fairly, was never involved in any police brutality. That I'm aware of. I mean, I definitely got my hands dirty pretty much every week in terms of, I mean, violence is just unavoidable when you're a cop in a populated area. So, yeah, I boy, it's tough to talk about. But, all right, I it was a tough gig. I never wanted to do it. Like I said last week, it was just a means to an end. It was a job. But I felt like I was a good cop in the sense that I did my job well. Like I was with anything I've ever tried to do. If you're going to do it, try to do it to the best of your ability. So I definitely took it seriously in that if you don't take it seriously, this is one of those jobs that if you're not taking it seriously and you got your head up your ass, you might wind up dead, or somebody else might wind up dead because of your negligence. So I took it seriously in that regard, and I was good at it in that regard, and I felt like I was an honest cop and a fair cop. Like I said, probably had 1,000 opportunities, literally at least 1,000 opportunities to make a marijuana-related arrest, made zero because of my fiance at the time. I was like, you know, how can I sleep at night or look myself in the mirror if I'm out here locking people up on chicken shit weed charges when I go home and watch my fiance light up a dupe? So, you know, that was a decision I made, and it almost got me in trouble. Like, there were several times where, you know, my supervisors, my sergeants or lieutenants, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why is this guy not under arrest? And I'm like, eh, cut him a break. You know, yeah. no way am I about to get married to a huge pothead, and I don't want to be a fucking hypocrite. You know, I kept that secret. But yeah, you're allowing me some discretion. I'm going to use my discretion in this regard. And I didn't like the job, but I tried to do it well, and I was honest and fair, and I don't think I did anything that I was ashamed of, except for what I'm about to tell you now. There was a lot, unfortunately, there was a lot of corruption floating around in my department. We dealt with a lot of minorities, and in particular, Latinos. And there was a lot of corruption floating around in terms of, oh man, this is, fuck, I don't want to talk about this.
I mean, don't feel pressure to.
But okay, let me, this is important. I was, towards the end of my run, and this is what led to what I'm about to reveal. I was incredibly disgruntled. I had spoken up a couple of different times against behavior that I witnessed involving fellow officers. A couple times it was theft. A couple times it was police brutality, where I thought people had stepped way over the line. And a couple of times I spoke up, and it bit me in the ass in terms of, I can't remember all the details, but, like, you know, just speaking up and saying, hey, Sarge, you know, I don't want to be a rat, but my partner over here crossed a line. And I think in two or three, I think this happened two or three times where I spoke up. I feel like every time it was nothing that I necessarily initiated, meaning I was asked. I was pulled aside and said, hey, Stone, what'd you witness Thursday night with Officer so-and-so? And I'm like, well, all right, since you're asking, I'm going to tell you. And
even if it was against a fellow officer.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like I said last week, you know, it's that camaraderie between cops, that's a real thing. And but my obligation is to make sure that my fellow officers are safe. It's, I'm not necessarily obligated to help them do something shitty or cover up something shitty they did. So I spoke out a couple times. One time it was about some missing money. Another time it was about a beat down. Guy went way overboard, beat the shit out of a dude where he didn't need to. And one time it bit me in the I got labeled like I got transferred because I spoke up against a superior officer. A sergeant had done something wrong. I was asked about it. I told the truth, and then I got then it was deemed that me and this sergeant can't work the same shift anymore. And because he outranked me, guess what, Stone? You're moving to a different shift. Which that's kind of a big deal in police work. You get accustomed to working a particular schedule and a particular shift. For example, I used to work what's called afternoon watch or second watch, which would be like 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. And that's a pretty good schedule for a cop, because you get to sleep late and you still get to get home at a reasonable hour and hang out with your family, whatever. So that was a pretty sweet gig, and I worked that for a couple years. And then I spoke up against my sergeant, who beat the fucking shit out of a dude that he shouldn't have. And next thing I know, now I'm on morning watch because Stone's an agitator. And so a couple of those things happened. There was a couple other things where I wrecked a car when I was involved in a police chase, and I got suspended because I wrecked a car, even though the guy was chasing, slammed into me. And you have to go to these citizen review boards, and you got people from the fucking water department and the fucking library. There's these civilian review boards that are made up of employees of all walks of county government. Okay. So you go into these review boards, and you got the librarian and the fucking county mortician and, you know, a secretary from the fire department judging your police actions,
yeah,
judging stuff that they have zero training and zero experience in. So I felt like I got fucked over a couple times.
But isn't that kind of what's happening with the police now, with everybody seeing select videos and then making a wide judgment on all police force?
Exactly.
And I am going devil's advocate here. I'm sorry, man. I'm gonna go on that.
Long story short, I don't know how to get into this, but I fucked up, man.
Yeah.
We dealt with a lot of Latinos, and I love Latinos. I got no problem with them, and I treated everybody fairly. I gave everybody the benefit of the doubt. But, and this isn't, I don't want this to come off as racist or anything, but a lot of the Latinos that were coming over here were new to America, and they were very accustomed to corruption from police in their homeland, whether it be Mexico or Guatemala or Honduras. And there was a habit, apparently, in some of those areas of bribing cops and paying for tickets on site.
Yeah, you travel with cash in Mexico.
Yeah. And I had seen that done before. I had been offered bribes, not necessarily bribes, but like, hey, can I pay for it here? And, you know, being like, well, no, that's not how this works, idiot. You know, here's your ticket. You call there. It's the same spiel. Here's your ticket. You circle the phone number on the back. Hey, wait seven business days. Call this number. They'll tell you how much your ticket is. They'll tell you where to mail it. If you got a court date, they'll tell you when that is, blah, blah, blah. It's out of my hands now. Well, I was incredibly disgruntled. I felt like I got fucked over about three times, and just hated the gig. Was actively spent the last year of my police career in the hiring process for the Cobb County Fire Department. I spent the last year trying to transition over to the fire department because I knew I knew early on that this just wasn't the gig for me. It just affects your quality of life. You just see so much horrible shit. I mean, no hyperbole. I've seen 75 dead bodies. I've carried suicide victims. I've lifted suicide victims out of their noose and carried them down attic staircases. I've put a decapitated head in a fucking trash bag. I've given CPR to a three-year-old boy who fucking died right in front of me. And none of this I'm saying to elicit sympathy for my actions, but it was a horrible gig, and I just wasn't cut out for it. And I was actively looking to stop doing the gig. I was trying to get hired on at the fire department, and I was so fucking pissed and so disgruntled. And one night, I make a traffic stop, harmless enough. The guy's tag was expired or something. This is a Latino fella. And doing my spiel. Here's your ticket. Here's your phone number. Call this number. And he's like, well, how much is it going to cost? And he spoke very, very little English. And I spoke a little Spanish back then. We were all trained in rudimentary Spanish in terms of, you know, basic stuff. Manos atrás, tienes drogas, tienes armas, you know, no se mueva. You know, stuff you need to communicate as a police officer. This guy kept asking me how much it's going to cost. And most cops don't really know. Like, you know, that shit, the fines and the fees, they all change. You just call the courthouse. Call this number. They'll tell you. I don't know how much it costs. But you kind of had a general idea. And this guy was like, how much it costs? How much it costs? I was like, I don't know. It's like $100. And he whipped out two $50 bills. And he was like, I want to pay here. And I'm not going to do his accent, but it was very broken English. Like, I pay here. I pay you. I pay you. I was like, no, no, man. That's not how this works. Mm-hmm. Call this number. You fuck, they'll tell you where to send your payment, blah, blah. I pay you. Why I no pay you? I'm sorry, I'm not trying to do a derogatory accent.
We know where you're coming from,
very,
yeah.
Very broken English. I want to pay you now. I'll pay you now. And this is fresh off of me coming off of suspension, fresh off of me coming, getting transferred to another shift. Probably my lowest point of being disgruntled, of just like...
The suspension was from wrecking the car?
I got suspended without pay for 2 weeks for wrecking a car, even though in a civilian situation we would have ticketed and arrested. Well, the other guy did get ticketed and arrested, but somehow I'm at fault. There's a lot of shit like that. And couldn't have been any more disgruntled. I pay you now. No, man, call this number. Going round and round for like 5 minutes with this fucking dude. He's got two crisp $50 bills. And finally, I said, you know what? Fuck it. You can pay me here. And I took one of the $50 bills out of his hand. And I said, sure, you can pay here. And it wasn't a fuck you to this guy. It wasn't me trying to fuck over this guy. It was a big fuck you middle finger to the Cobb County Police Department. It was an act of rebellion. It was like, hey, fuck you, guy. And of course, I knew it was wrong. But I was like, you know what? And I didn't need the money. I was making good money, you know. I mean, for a cop, I had benefits, I had side gigs, I had a free apartment. There's this thing called courtesy officers. A lot of police officers will be the impromptu security guard in their apartment complex in exchange for discounted or sometimes free rent. I had a free apartment. I was making good money. Didn't need the $50. It was a fuck you to the Cobb County Police Department. And I took the guy's $50. And I don't even know what I did with it. 3 months later, this is how the story was told to me. 3 months later, this guy, his brother gets a ticket, and they're talking. And I guess my victim told his brother, it's like, oh, you don't, he's like, you don't have to send it in. You can pay the officer right there on the street.
Smart choice brother was not doing the accent there.
Yeah, and a little, I guess his brother was a little more savvy, a little more knowledgeable, and he's like, what are you talking about? That's not how this works. And he goes, no, I did it like 3 months ago. I paid the cop, and the guy's like, wait a minute. And he's thinking, you know, and rightfully so. He's like, did you just get taken advantage of by a cop? What are you talking about? He's like, no, I didn't even have to mail it in. I just paid the cop. And his brother reports the incident, and they figure out the time and the location and the physical description of the cop. And, yeah, man, got called in, not to bore you with these details, but like you have your officers, you have a sergeant, you have a lieutenant, you have a commander over the precinct. The commander's the top dog in the precinct. The commander never gets on the radio. He's behind the scenes. You never hear the top dog of the precinct, on the radio, you know, responding to 911 calls or anything. He's just silent. Well, one day, over the radio, 3101 to 3113, 59 at the precinct immediately. 59 means meet. And everybody's like, ooh. 3101 was the commander's handle.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what the fuck? 3113, that's Stone. What the fuck? He's calling out Stone over the radio to meet at the precinct. And this was 3 months later, and I knew what I had done, and I only did it once. You can believe that or not, but it was a split second of terrible judgment. So it's not something that it was even, I mean, it was in the back of my mind, but it's because it happened 3 months ago, 3 months earlier, and because it was an isolated incident, it didn't really pop in my mind immediately what I was in for. And then I get back to the precinct, and my commander's there, my lieutenant's there, my sergeant's there. I go in their office, and then there's also a guy from the GBI. GBI is the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, kind of a state level FBI.
Yeah, I've been seeing that.
They did an undercover case on me. This guy had been following me around for months, waiting for me to do it again. And I didn't. It didn't happen again. And I got a story about that I'll tell in a minute, but I'll wrap this part of it up. On the radio, 3101 to 3113, 59 back at the precinct immediately. Oh, shit. And they told me, they said, hey, you know anything about, they had the guy's name. They're like, do you know, and I forgot the guy's name. Do you know whatever the guy's name is? And I go, no, it doesn't ring a bell. And they explained the incident, and they're like, is this true? And I was like, yep.
Yeah.
And was immediately placed under arrest.
Really?
And taken to the headquarters and spent about 6 hours in the interrogation room. And they were convinced that I was a part of some ring of dirty cops because this had been going on. I had seen this kind of stuff happen before, but they were convinced that I was part of a ring of cops that had been doing this for years. And they were going to make an example out of me. I was fired immediately, yeah. Placed under arrest.
But so others were doing it. They said others. So that means.
Yeah. Apparently this is. Others had been doing it, and I hadn't seen that exact example of a cop just taking it right there, you know, on a traffic stop. But I had seen various degrees of theft, and what I was charged with was extortion. You know, because the argument was, you know, the prosecutor's argument was I was putting this guy in a position of like, hey, you pay me $100 or $50 mm-hmm. bucks, or else I'm going to write you this ticket, or I'm going to take you to jail. And that was not the case. I never threatened. You know, it wasn't, hey man, give me some of your money and we'll make this go away.
No, you were bribed. You got bribed, is what it was.
Yeah, and I'm not. I'm taking full responsibility, but I'm saying I didn't just wake up that morning and go, oh, I'm going to go rip off a Mexican. I'm going to find someone mm-hmm. to take advantage. Yeah. I was trying to write the guy a normal ticket. He kept flashing the $50. And I didn't even really at first think of it like he was trying to bribe me. I thought he was sincere and like, you know, can I just pay this here? I work 50 hours a week. I don't want to go to the court case. And it just literally how your life can change in 1 second, just literally 1 second of terrible judgment. And I went, you know what? You can pay that ticket here. Fuck, not fuck you, sir, but fuck my supervisors. Fuck this job. Fuck this job. Yeah, I'll take. And the irony is, I didn't even take both 50s. I took one. Like, I just like grabbed one of the 50s out of his hand.
I'm assuming this was like pre body cam and anything like that.
Yeah, pre body cam. We had audio recorders, but they hardly ever worked. Like, I think it was like whenever the lights went on in your car, the audio kicked in.
Okay.
But I knew that half of those didn't work, and I don't know what I was thinking in that moment, but there was no audio of me, you know, negotiating this $50 away from this guy or anything.
But it's like the equivalent of like when somebody's like, oh, I want to add, like, you know, you're at the grocery store, oh, I want to add this pack of gum. Nah, just take the gum. I don't care. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And honestly, people believe me or not, trust me, I didn't want to tell this story, so please understand that I'm telling the complete truth. It was a one-time thing. They were convinced that I was part of a ring of dirty cops that had been doing this, and they were going to make an example out of me. I got arrested immediately, and I was told that there is no plea bargain because here's the other part of the story. Fast forward a couple days later, my fucking mugshot is all over the Atlanta local news for like a week. Dirty Cobb County, dirty cop arrested. My fucking mugshot. You talk about humility. I mean, it's the most shameful thing I've ever experienced, and I hope that I never experience anything as shameful, but everybody I knew, you know, all my friends, all my family, old Stone's a dirty cop. Saw his mugshot on the fucking local news.
Is there any kind of like resentment? Like, oh, just the excitement to vilify a police officer for this. Like for murder, yeah, you're going to get dragged. But to vilify the idea of a dirty cop as like a juicy news story in your case.
Well, and I think really the
Tell the whole story. Like, did they tell the whole story? How did they report the story? Or is it not? It doesn't even matter at that point. Here's your picture. Here's the title. The story doesn't matter, which is never more relevant than now of just people. I saw that Twitter wants to try and limit people. Like, you won't be able to share an article unless you like can. I don't know how, but prove that you actually read it. To try and stop disinformation and things just being like, well, look at this headline, and then they just share it.
Yeah.
So something like that. Like, well, what if you read the story and you're like, oh, this guy took $50 because it was offered to him. Like, no, dirty cop in your face. So that's the story we're going to go with.
Well, and I think one of the main angles too, and I'm not saying that this is wrong. Like, I get it. I feel like had it been a white guy that I did that to, it wouldn't have been as big a story. I mean, I'm sure I would have gotten in trouble, but I'm saying the media's angle was white cop takes advantage of Latino motorist. It was that whole because there was and it still is, you know. And I'm not here to talk about immigration. I welcome everybody. What do I care? But my point is, a lot of people who are here illegally, specifically Latinos, they do get victimized by criminals and cops alike because they don't want to raise their hand and complain because they're in fear of getting deported. So it was that angle of extorting these Latinos because they know they're not going to complain because they don't want to risk getting deported. So that was really the angle. And I never watched any of the stories. I just saw, I'd be flipping through and I'd see, oh, there's my fucking picture again. I didn't have the stomach to sit and watch the stories when they came on the news. Mm-hmm. So I don't know exactly, you know, what the gist of the stories were. I just know that every night for about a week and a half, my fucking picture was on the Atlanta local news. And, here's what I was saying too. They, when they arrested me,
and I hope you know, like, somebody's going to go digging for that now.
And I've dug for it and I can't find much. Fortunately for me, this was 2004. So this was right before everything was online. And I've dug, and I'm sure if I dig deep enough, I could probably find something, but I haven't found anything online. But my point is, when they arrested me, and I get it, I shamed the entire department. This is a huge police department, you know, 700 officers, huge area that we patrolled. So this, you know, this wasn't some little rinky dink South Georgia no name town. This was Metro Atlanta, dirty cop. So I had shamed the entire department. I brought horrible attention to the entire department, and the internal affairs people, and then the prosecutors, they made it very clear that, there's not going to be a plea bargain. Even if you want to plead guilty for in exchange for a lesser sentence, we're not playing that game. We are making an example of you. This is going to go to trial. You are going to get convicted, and you are going to go to prison between 3 and 5 years. Yeah. And this process, from the time that I got arrested to the time it went to till it got solved, resolved rather, was about 6 months. But for 6 months, I was convinced that I am going to prison as a dirty cop.
Yeah,
meaning. I'm either going to get murdered or I'm going to have to murder somebody to prevent me from getting murdered. And essentially my life is fucked and over.
They didn't try. And, it wasn't like a now tell us what other cops, like they didn't want that attention. They'd be like,
no, they did. And because I wasn't, I didn't have any names to give them. And they were like, okay, fuckface, if you don't want to play ball, if you don't want to give us any other name. And I remember telling them specifically, because here's the point with this.
Well, this is an example of them trying to do the right thing and clean up what they believe you were a part of, which is a ring of dirty cops. So the GBI was, in this instance, trying to do the thing everybody wants right now, is which is to get the dirty cops out of the police force. So there was a, it's weird that this sucks for you, but it's also like, oh, sometimes they are trying to do the right thing, except that you got caught up in it for a stupid, like a nonchalant, like a mistake error that you made in judgment. But the GBI was trying to be like, well, we are trying to catch all these bad, crooked cops, which is what you want to hear, except you're Dave, and we all love Dave. We're like, oh, no, not Dave.
Yeah.
But get those fucking guys. But Dave, come on.
But the reason they wanted to make an example out of me, because they thought, not only, of course, did I shame the entire department and betray the public's trust, and I get that, but they thought I was covering up for other cops. Mm-hmm. And I remember specifically telling the internal affairs guy, because I was friendly. I had a bunch of, I was a good cop, and I was well-liked and well-respected up until that moment. But I wasn't super tight with, I didn't have any super close friends, because a lot of the guys, this is a whole nother thing that we can get to later, but you talk about racism within a police force. Oh boy. Rampant racism, rampant machismo. I just didn't connect on a personal level with a lot of my fellow officers, because I wasn't, I'm not saying they were all that meathead mindset, but a lot of them were. And to me, it was just a decent paycheck to start a family with. And for some of the others, it was, you know, this, they're the manifestation of all their ego and maybe racism or whatever. But there was a lot of fucking shitheads that I worked with, racist and mean and just assholes. And my point is, I didn't connect. I didn't have real tight bonds with anybody.
Yeah.
And I remember specifically telling the detective, I said, hey, man, just grilling me. Just, I mean, just like you see on 48 Hours, just in there with my fucking Diet Coke and my table and my chair talking to these two internal affairs detectives. And, you know, you're fucking lying. You're fucking full of shit. Give us some fucking names. We're going to make a fucking example. And I remember specifically telling him, I said, hey, asshole, if there was, trust me, if there were names to give, I would gladly give them. Because I'm not, I don't have lifelong bonds with almost any of these guys. If I could give you a name that would help my odds, Charlie, shut up. If I could give you names that would help me, I'd be glad to do it. But I can't just make up a name. Is even if I had beef with some of these idiots that I worked with, I'm not just gonna make, you know, say that Joe over there did it too when I know that he didn't. I knew that some guys were doing some things, but I had already done that. I had already spoken up against
that.
That's
what I mean. Can you point out to the past where you're like, I did this and I was called an agitator?
Yeah, exactly. And I did point that out. But they were just convinced that because it probably was going on with some, if not people on my shift, you know, other shifts or other precincts, I'm sure it was going on. And they knew that too. And then they're like, there's no way you can be doing this too and not be in cahoots with some of these other officers. And I said, dude, if there were names to give, I'd gladly fucking give them. But there aren't. It's just me. And they were going to make an example of me. So for 6 months, I was convinced that I'm about to go to prison for 5 years.
Yeah.
And in that 6 months, I had already started. One thing I am proud of, I was unemployed for one day. I got fired on the January 4th. January 5th, I licked my wounds. And the next day, January 6th, I went and interviewed for a limo driver gig, and I got hired that day. So I was unemployed during the lowest point in my life. I was unemployed for one day, got another gig. So that whole spring, those 6 months, I started driving limos immediately just to get some income going. And immediately, because this was also part of my plan before all this happened, I was going to get hired by the fire department. And because they work such a cool schedule of 24 on, 48 off, I was also going to start a landscaping business. So I was like, you know, all right, I'm gonna get hired as a fireman. And then I'll also start a landscaping business. So when I got fired and then I started driving limos, I immediately started working on and building my landscaping business. And it only took a few months. I only drove limos for a few months because a few months later I had built my business up enough to where that was the only gig I needed. But my point is, I had an assistant. This is funny. This is, and he wouldn't mind me telling this. It's weird. This is so fucking weird how the world works. The guys I used to tour manage, Stuck Mojo, that was before I was a cop, but I still remained friends with some of those guys. And the main guy, Rich Ward, people who know metal might know Rich Ward as just like iconic, not a household name per se, but in the music world, in the rock world, a iconic guitar player, just a guitar god. Yeah. But Rich We had reconvened during this time, and he was taking a break from touring for a while. So he started working for me in my landscaping company. So that whole winter and spring, me and my former boss, and also like one of my former musical heroes, like before I worked for them, I was a huge fan. So now Rich Ward, this rock god, is riding shotgun in my Ford Ranger while we go around Cherokee County cutting lawns all day. So that was weird. But during this exact same time, my attorney was telling me, you need to make preparations because you're probably going to prison for 3 to 5 years. And during this time, I had an arrangement with Rich. I was like, hey, man, if this doesn't work out in my favor, I'd love for you to take over my business and give a cut to my then fiance. That way she could be taken care of while I'm in fucking prison. So for 6 months, I thought I was going to prison as a dirty cop. And by some miracle, because all I heard was we're not doing a plea bargain. We're not giving you shit. We are going to trial. We're going to convict you. You're going to prison. By some fucking miracle, like at the last second, like a week before my final thing, my final court date, my attorney somehow got them to agree to a plea bargain. And I pled guilty of extortion, and it was two charges, extortion and violation of oath of office, and pled guilty to that in exchange for 5 years probation. Didn't go to prison.
Really?
Yeah, but I spent 6 months thinking I was about to go to prison as a dirty cop. And just, again, I don't want any sympathy. This is my own fucking mistake, but it was the most shameful, humiliating thing that I've ever experienced. And I hope I never experienced anything. And I deserved it. I'm not. Yes, it was a momentary lapse of judgment. No, I wasn't some predator out there looking to take advantage of people. But regardless, I fucked up. And whatever was coming my way, I was ready to take it on. And I got lucky that somehow they, even though they said they weren't, they decided to do a plea bargain. Oh, man, but what was my point? Oh, just the shame and humiliation of everyone I went to high school with. I was still living. I had moved back to kind of my hometown. So I was currently living in Ball Ground, Georgia, which is the same county I grew up in. So everywhere I went.
Ball Ground, did you say?
Ball Ground, Georgia. Yeah, that's where I was living at the time. I had a house. And every day, I'd be at the gas station or the lawnmower repair shop or mowing somebody's lawn, and I'd run into somebody from high school who would act real awkward. And I'm like, yeah, I know, man. I know you saw the news. And immediately started growing the beard. That's where the beard came from. I immediately,
you're like Wolverine or something. Like disgraced lawman, just trying to live out in the country without people finding out his past, still passionate for justice.
I immediately started growing the beard because the first thing I wanted to do was to disguise my identity. I grew my hair out long, not long, but like, you know, kind of shaggy. I grew my hair out and I grew a beard. That way, at the very least, when I'm in the gas station, I don't look like my fucking mugshot. And I don't know if this means anything or whatever, but a year later is when I started comedy. And it was my mission. And I know you're not supposed to start comedy for fame or fortune, but one of my goals when I started comedy, one of my goals when I started comedy, a few weeks into it, it only took a few weeks into comedy to realize, oh shit, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. This is no longer a hobby. I'm not nearly good enough yet to make a living at it, but one day I'm going to stick with this and I'm going to make a living at it. But one of my goals was I want to get on TV again for something other than my mugshot.
Clean the slate.
I got to do a late night spot. I got to get some TV credits. I got to get on TV again to kind of erase this horrible shame. And I did that.
Fucking Dave. If you got a late night spot to do comedy and your whole thing was like, I'm not a dirt dirty cop. Like, what's he talking about?
Yeah. What? And that's the paradox, because I know in my heart that I wasn't a dirty cop. I know that I was, in fact, a good cop. I was fair. I did the job. Like, I'm not bragging, but I was good at it. Like, it just takes common sense and a little bit of courage and a little bit of fucking empathy and smarts. And I was good at it. I didn't like the job, but I was good at it. I think
you're a good person, which made you complicated cop.
That's the shame. Like, I knew in my heart that I wasn't a dirty cop, but I don't have, and to this day, I don't have a leg to stand on because I fucked up. I took money from a citizen that I shouldn't have. So, and you know, and that's why it's always been such a fucking secret. Not only if I would have been honorably discharged, if I would have retired with accreditations, I still wouldn't be in this day and age bragging about my cop past, because cops have such a horrible stigma. But on top of that, the way it ended, fucking the disgrace and the humiliation of being a dirty cop. Yeah, I'm gonna keep this secret for a fucking while. That was my mentality up until last week. So there we go, man.
It's out, man. Now it's out. How do you feel?
I don't feel good, but there is an element of relief of, like, and that's the thing too. And this might be stupid, but like, I'm not famous, and I'm probably never gonna be famous, and I don't give a fuck. That's not why I started doing comedy. But in the back of my mind, it was always like, oh shit, what happens if I do get kind of famous and then this comes out? You know, that's something I've been dealing with for 15 years.
It's not like you lied about being in 9/11 or anything.
Yeah. True.
You just added layers to that cake, baby.
Yeah. And you know, we don't have time to get into today. But, you know, I'll tell some stories. I have mostly horrible stories of things I've seen, but there's a few good things I did here and there. But it changes you, man. Even, like I said, even if it hadn't ended poorly, being a cop changes someone. And again, don't confuse that as me being a cop apologist, because myself and every other cop, no one made you do it. And if you're going to do it right and do it honestly. And no one made me take that $50, but man, it definitely, it keeps you humble and it keeps you grounded when you know you've shamed your family. You know, I shamed my family. I shamed my fiance, everybody I ever knew, you know. Just, I mean, short of being a rapist or a pedophile, you know, what has a worse stigma than dirty cop?
I mean, but that's what people, like, dirty in what way? That's where you got fucked. It's like, not dirty in, like, I'm ripping the people off. I'm doing, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I did a dirty cop thing. I took money that I shouldn't have taken. Like, and that's the thing. I feel like I don't even deserve a platform to defend myself. Like, you know, how do you defend that? How do you know? It's like, yeah. Yeah,
Dave.
No one wants to hear about the good things.
If you use our ghoul and goblin fake computer radio show to defend your actions, I don't know what to do for you. This is the place for it, Dave. You're safe here. The fans love you. They're appreciative of your honesty. And I truly don't think you need to be. I think I can maybe understand the shame of, like, I did a thing that's, you know, stigmatized by everybody else. But now here's the story of it. Now you at least got to say the whole story.
Yeah, and that is the story. I'm not embellishing, or, you know, that's exactly what happened. It was a one-time thing. And I, you know, even with that, that was definitely impactful. It was definitely something tough to come to terms with, but even with that, I sleep fine at night, because beyond that 1 second of terrible judgment, I know that I was a good cop, and I know that I was and am a good person, and it definitely keeps you grounded in that. It gives you empathy for everybody else of, like, well, let's not judge too harshly, because remember that fucking bonehead mistake you made, dumbass? you know, not defending police brutality or anything like that. I'm just saying across the board in all walks of life, it's a constant reminder to not be too judgmental, because I'm not saying anybody could have done what I did. I'm just saying you don't know what's around the corner. You don't know what temptations or what pitfalls lie around that next corner. And I hope that that's the last one I made.
Yeah, whatever. You got any recipes this week? I've
Oh, man.
He hung up.
Oh, I just hung up on you. Fucking earbuds falling out. All right, sorry about that. Had the earbud problem.
I was like, oh man, I was trying to make a funny turn. I hope he's not pissed.
I'm out of here. Click.
Motherfucker, I'm bearing my soul. Well,
yeah, that's the story.
But like we were talking about last time, you know, where I get angry at the, and what a very privileged thing about being angry about, like, don't give me a better ticket because you're doing me a favor. Give me the ticket you're supposed to give me.
Mm-hmm.
Or just don't give me a ticket at all.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, you showing that judgment means like, well, you know, it's knowing that there's things that are right and there's things that are illegal, and those things don't always overlap.
Yeah.
Or things that are wrong and things that are illegal. You know what I'm trying to say here.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when you're a police officer, you're expected to operate by what's right, not always what your judgment is.
Yeah.
Even though we want to see them use judgment that benefits people,
mm-hmm.
not judgment that benefits themselves.
Yeah.
You are using judgment that benefit that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You got $50 in your pocket, but then that guy didn't have to pay $100 and deal with shit, whether he knew what he was doing or didn't know. It's, you know, you were just using your judgment of like, I'm having a shit day at work and here's this. And there was really there was no victim.
Yeah.
But there was no victim.
Well, and I've thought a lot about that too, that in
other than
theory,
other than the pride of the police department.
In theory, it was a victimless crime, but I feel like the victim is my community. Now, you know, we've got cops out here that are bending the rules. And I mean, yes, if you want to break it down, there was no victim, you know, and I sure as fuck don't feel guilty that the Cobb County Police Department missed out on those $100 that ticket would have generated. Fuck them. And this isn't like sour grapes, like fuck them because I got in trouble. No, fuck them for all the bullshit that I saw and put up with prior to that night. You know, this whole, I talked about that last week, the whole stat driven thing. Oh, I used to get all kinds of, hey, we have this thing called a daily, and your daily is just your, a form you keep that tracks everything you did that night. You know, at 2200 hours, I went to this address and handled this call. At 2215, I went to this address and handled that call. I would sometimes come in with a daily that had three or four lines on it, and they'd be like, Stone, what the fuck? What are you doing? Oh, yeah. Oh, Smith over here's got, he wrote 15 tickets tonight. Look at your daily. You didn't hardly do anything. Yeah, read between the lines, dipshit. I spent 4 hours on a fucking suicide call, and I spent another 3 hours on a fucking child molestation call. I'm sorry I didn't get to write 15 tickets tonight, Sarge. Yeah. But it was a lot of that shit, like only looking at your stats. And I'm like, motherfucker, I didn't sign up for this job to write speeding tickets. First of all, I didn't sign up this job because it was something I wanted to do anyway. It was a paycheck. But if I'm going to do it, I was more interested in responding to 911 calls and helping people than sitting around fucking pointing a radar gun at cars and writing tickets. Like, yeah, that's a whole other can of worms.
Minuscule bullying on teen drivers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we called that cheese dick. We had so many cheese dick charges, like just people that just, we had cops that, like I said, I think I mentioned this last week. I would go to dangerous calls with no backup because my beat partner's writing, he's running radar on the interstate and he's writing tickets. All right, well, yeah, Stone doesn't need any backup. Lock Aruba's over here writing fucking speeding tickets. Good for him. And just shit like that. Just that overall mentality of, just where's your stats? What are you doing? What? Like, I didn't ask these 911. I didn't ask to go to this fucking rape call tonight, Sarge. Yeah. But it got assigned to me, and I'm sorry it took 3 hours to handle. That's why I wasn't writing any tickets tonight. And I was never that cop anyway. I never sat around and just wrote. Like, it's called being proactive. Cops need to stop cars sometimes. It's called being proactive. You stop a guy for speeding, even if you don't write him a ticket. Yeah, maybe he's got 10 pounds of cocaine or a dead body in the trunk. You know, yes, you stop cars that need to be stopped, but you don't have to write everybody a ticket. And where we were, it was such a busy area that if you're not going to a call now, just wait 5 minutes and it's coming. But yet we had all these fucking Rambos out there writing speeding tickets, and oh, they're great cops. But look at Stone. He didn't do anything except carry a fucking dead body down an attic staircase with his fucking dead head flapping and hitting me in the face. He didn't write any tickets tonight.
Yeah, give that guy a postmortem parking ticket or something, because you know, I guess you do have to tow his car if he's not going to be able to move it from the spot.
But yeah, no, I have sour grapes before that incident. Like, there was a lot, and again, not justifying what I did, but I did it because I was pissed and I was disgruntled, and it was a fuck you. You know, I didn't pull my gun and demand this guy give me $50. He's waving it in my face anyway. There's a language barrier, sure. Fuck it. After explaining it to him 10 times, yes, I'll take your $50. Fuck you, police department. 3 months later. Oh, well, one thing I was going to say, that investigation, I didn't know this at the time, but the GBI had an open investigation on me for about 3 months. And this happened to me, and it blew my mind when it happened. And then later, when the shit hit the fan, I found out what this was. All right, so the crime I committed happened somewhere around October. All right. So, and it hit the fan in January. So it was about 3 months between the time that I did my thing and the time I got busted for it. Mm-hmm. In that time, unbeknownst to me, the GBI was tailing me almost every night to see if I was doing this again or if I was doing this routinely. And I remember one night specifically, there was this car. It was a busy night, and I'm just going, hopping from call to call to call. Just no time to be proactive, no time to stop cars and initiate traffic stops, because just going from one call to another. And I remember this one night, I kept seeing the same car about three or four times. And every time I'd be on my way to a call, there'd be this car, and every time he was like just begging to get pulled over. Like, one time he was right in front of me. The first time he pulled right out in front of me, made me slam my brakes on. And I, like, lit him up just to, like a fuck you. Like, I turned my lights on, but I didn't stop him. And then because I couldn't stop him. Like, I had to go to this call. So that was frowned upon. And we had idiots that would do that. You know, oh, there's a robbery in progress, but hold on, this guy's tag light is out, so let me stop him first. So I'm en route to a call. This car pulls out in front of me, makes me slam on my brakes. I'm like, man, what the? Really? You just pulled out in front of a cop? Okay. Lucky for you, asshole, I got to go handle this call. So I just flashed my lights at him and kept going. Clear that call, hour or two later, driving to the next call. I see the same car. And this time he's like speeding or swerving or something. I'm like, that's that same fucking car. What the fuck? Again, damn it. I wish I wasn't going to this call because this guy's begging to get pulled over. Third time in the same night, I see the same car. This time, I'm not en route to a call. He pulls out right in front of me and then throws a Burger King sack out the window right in front of me. And I go, oh, my God, this motherfucker is just begging to get pulled over. So I pull him over. I pull him over, and I talk to the guy. And I go, hey, man, what the hell did you pull your trash or throw your trash out for? And he's a Latino guy, and he's speaking Spanish. Oh, you know, he's broken English. And I was just kind of laying into him. I'm like, you know, hey, man, are you that unaware? You're driving around here. You don't realize that there's a cop behind you and you're throwing garbage out for me. And I wrote him a ticket for littering. And I think something else. Like, I was looking for shit at this point. Like, this asshole is just begging to stop. So I wrote him a ticket for littering. I think I wrote him expired tag or something. And the guy starts pulling out cash. And I pay here. Can I pay here?
Same thing.
And I'm thinking, like, well, boy, this is fucking weird. I remember this happened once before, about 3 months earlier. Yeah. And fortunately for me, I was like, fuck no, you can't pay here. Here's, you know, gave him his ticket, circled the number. You know, I think I was a dick to him. I'm like, hey man, you know, just don't be a fucking idiot and do stupid things in front of a cop. Like I was just couldn't wrap my mind around A, why this guy's doing this shit, and then B, he was trying to bribe me.
Yeah.
And fortunately for me, I was like, no, sir, that's not how this works. Enjoy your tickets, drive safe. And later when I got arrested and was meeting with internal affairs and everything, that guy was an undercover GBI officer who was trying to bait me, and he was videoing me and audio recording me, and they were trying to get me to commit the same crime again, but this time on tape. That blew my mind. It didn't dawn on me in the moment. It didn't dawn on me that, like, you know, something fishy was up. I was just like, what an odd coincidence that this fucking idiot who I've seen three times tonight is also trying to pay me off. Didn't dawn on me that, you know, that was an undercover cop or whatever, but yeah, later found out that that's who that dude was. And I like, well, and I even used that. I even, not that I had a leg to stand on, but I was like, and what did the tape show there, detective?
Yeah.
Did I take his money? No, I didn't. So further proof that, yes, this was an isolated incident fueled by terrible judgment.
Well, shit, man, I don't even know. I don't even comment. It's that weird thing where I'm like, I'm glad, like, I know you're good and didn't do anything malicious. Also still glad that the GBI was trying to catch cops being corrupt, but misguided in their effort coming after you.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm.
Oh, boy.
There it is.
Yeah, man. I don't think anybody can be coming at you over this stuff.
And I don't care. You know, it doesn't bother me. You know, if your opinion of me has changed, hey, I get it.
But it's the example of a guy who just took a job because they needed a job. And, you know, maybe wasn't prepared to do that kind of job. And this is some of the results of it, where it's like we expect a lot from police officers. Maybe they should be trained. You know, my buddy Kevin's been going off on, you know, like just the different amount of training it takes for different jobs versus police department. Like, just all these things, like trying to prevent yahoos from getting into it. Like, I mean, it looked like an attractive thing for you at the time. I got a fiance. Yeah. I need some work.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's like, exactly, oh, look at this. And maybe that's why it's a shit job. So they got to make it look good.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason the military isn't like, do you want to feel cool with a gun? They're like, no, we'll pay for college, please. It's not a great job. They have to make it look attractive.
Yeah. And just, I mean, it really, even before this incident, like it fucked me up. Like it changed my personality because every night I was seeing the worst shit. I mean, I don't even have time to go into some of the shit I've seen, but like, you just see so much horrible shit, and it just it affected me. Like I'm sure you could ask my ex fiance. Like, you know, I never mistreated her. You know, I've never, you know, committed any domestic violence or anything like that. But it definitely affected my mood. I'm sure I was a shitty boyfriend.
When your job sucks,
yeah. I mean,
when your way to survive makes you miserable, like, what a catch 22. You need this to live. I don't really like living.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
goes back to these van YouTubers.
We'll get into some random stories later, but just, I mean, some of the shit I've seen, and again, not saying this for any sympathy, and it doesn't justify what I did.
Man, but, talking about your experience in life.
Yeah. I'll tell one story real quick. I mean, I was on scene when my partner shot and killed a guy. I was drawn down. I had my gun pointed at the same guy. And this guy was, we were serving a warrant. We were assisting the sheriff's department. This guy was going to jail for like 40 years. And we got into his apartment. He's in his bedroom. He's wearing sweatpants. He told us he had a gun. Mm-hmm. I got a gun. Fuck you. I ain't going back. Fuck you. I ain't going back. I got a gun. We're screaming at him. Show us your hands. Show us your hands. Show us your hands. Show us your hands. Boom. Partner put a fucking slug, shotgun slug through this fucking chest. Just watched a man die. Like, it's fucking crazy.
Did he have a gun?
Yeah. Yeah, he had a gun in his pants. He didn't pull it, but he twitched. And ultimately, my partner was a cleared case. It was justified because he did have a gun and he did make threats.
But this is the kind of stuff where we could see where it gets skewed of like the officer cleared of shooting unarmed black man.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the case was the guy said he had a gun, refused to comply.
Mm-hmm.
And everything went towards you guys doing the right thing and defending yourself when the guy said he had a gun, but then how it will be portrayed.
Of course.
So there is nuance to some of the stuff that's going on right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'll say this real quick, and I don't say this happily, but many a times unarmed people get shot by the police and it is justified. And what I mean is, let's say that guy didn't have a gun, even though he did. He didn't show it. He told us he had a gun. We were begging him to take his hands out of his pockets. And we were trained this way. And I don't know if this is ultimately good training or bad training, but in the way the law was written, if the guy says he's got a gun in his pants and he says he's not going back to jail, and we're begging him to pull his hands out, show us his hands. When he makes a move, a jerky move, and he gets shot and killed, and we find out that he didn't have a gun, that's still a justified shooting. Because the way we were trained, by the time we see the gun come out of his pants, it's too late for us. Like, they've done studies and drills and experiments of, like, it's like playing defense in football. Why defense is harder than offense. The offense knows where the play's going and the defense is reacting. There's many cases. And yes, the headline sounds fucked up. Police shoot and kill unarmed man. And again, I'm not justifying anything. I'm just saying there are examples of an unarmed man getting shot and killed by the police, and it's justified because of all the small nuance and the intangibles of he wouldn't show us his hands. He told it. He made threats. He said he's not going back to jail, and he made a move for his pocket. By the time we wait and see that gun come out of his pants, it could be too late for us. And but we gave him multiple opportunities to comply.
So without if you exclude the current climate we're in, if the story about Atlanta just happened, like, oh, a drunk guy fought with cops, got their taser and pointed it at him, and then they shot him and killed him, would that be a news story?
Yeah, that'd be a news story even without this climate, yeah. And I honestly don't, like we said earlier,
That's not an unarmed man anymore.
Yeah. And I don't know how that case is going to end up, and I don't know what's the right thing. Like I said, me personally, especially in this climate, if I'm fighting with a guy who did nothing but was drunk in a parked car, and he grabbed my taser and ran off, guess what? Have fun with that taser, buddy. I'm not following you.
Yeah.
I got your ID. I got your car. We'll issue a warrant. I'm not going to... Yes, and I know that he turned and aimed it at him, but... And yes... The cop's attorney can articulate that had he made contact with that taser, he could have incapacitated that cop and then went and took his real gun and shot and killed him. But you got 2-on-1 and he's running away. That's again, not saying one way or the other, but that's why it's so fucking difficult. Like I said earlier, and again, I'm not being an apologist. I'm just saying this is what I experienced. I know, but I don't want to even remotely sound like I'm defending poor judgment on a cop's case, but I'm saying these cops have a split second to make a decision that we all have weeks and months and years to examine.
Hence the idea of maybe more training and de-escalation and all the other things that would not, I'm talking out of school on stuff. Dave, ultimately you're doing a good thing. You're providing perspective on people that are, for people that are frustrated on both sides of the fence frustrated, and you're like, well, guess what? I've lived on both sides of the fence. Here's my mm-hmm. take on it. And that's a good thing. Yeah. You're doing a good thing. I'll ask again, are there any recipes this week?
I made some grits this week. I bought some
why do you keep,
mail order grits.
Goddamn, every time I make that joke, you hang up on me.
Grits through the mail. Can't find grits out here in California.
Is it that bad of a joke?
I made some awesome grits.
I'm calling them back.
Lost them again. Oh, I lost you again, buddy. Sorry.
Is it that bad of a joke?
I don't know. Every time I touch my ear pods to adjust them, I guess there's a certain little area you can touch it that hangs up the call.
Just refusing to lighten the mood.
I was telling you about grits. I bought some grits and I made some grits. And grits, yeah. It's my buddy Craig's recipe, so I don't want to take credit for the recipe, but I'll just say soak your grits overnight and use a little half and half. And use the grit water that you soaked them in. You want to use water. A 4-to-1 ratio of liquid to grits. So use some of that grit water and use a little half and half or heavy cream. Boil those bastards up. And, oh, boy, nothing like good homemade grits. I know people outside of the South grit may not water. Have an appreciation for it, but, oh, I love some grits.
I don't know. I'm happy for you that you're talking about this. Your big secret's out, buddy. It's all right.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Do with that what you will, people. I will say this. Got a lot of positive feedback from last week's episode. A lot of people reaching out and, saying they appreciate me sharing that story. I don't know if I'll get any positive feedback this week now that there's a twist in the story.
I think you will. Regardless, I think people are still just being people are excited to, like, not excited, but glad you're coming forward with it.
Well, thanks, buddy. And again, not to sound defensive or anything, but I sleep fine at night. You know, this was 15 years ago. I'm not happy that it happened. I'm definitely not proud of it. But I've come to terms with it, and I know that 1 second of bad judgment is not going to identify who I am as a person. And I sleep fine at night. I treat people around me as good as I can, and I feel like I treat people fairly. And if you want to judge me on that, you know, I get it, because when you do something like that, you don't have much of a leg to stand on. But I have come to terms with it, and I'll say this: that old adage of everything happens for a reason or whatever. I didn't have the balls to just quit that job, meaning I needed the paycheck so bad, and there was benefits and decent pay, and like I said, almost immediately I knew that this was the wrong gig. So I didn't have the balls to just quit it cold turkey and do something else. I was trying to transfer over to the fire department. But my point is, had that not happened to me, I very well may have never been a comedian. You know, I can't see just quitting and starting a comedy career. But because I did want to be a comedian for many years before I actually started. And I'll just say that in a weird way, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. It got me. It may have saved my life from being a cop, whether it be on the job shit or just heart attack or drinking myself to death to try to numb the bullshit that I saw every night. But in a weird way, it's the best thing that ever happened to me, because a year later, I started comedy.
I just love this as the alternate ending to what's his name's character from Lethal Weapon. Like rogue maniacal cop that just wants to do the right thing but not follow the rules, and lives in a trailer by the river, but instead of taking down an international drug ring, he just transitions into like improv.
Oh god,
it's a happy ending.
That is funny.
All right, buddy. Well, get you some grits. You got a new grill.
Yeah, man. Gonna fire up some shit here tomorrow, probably. Alrighty. Enjoy Portland, my friend.
I will, man. We're settling in. We'll see. We'll see what kind of life. And I feel bad. I know we keep teased this video idea that we just. That's my fault. Blame Kyle. Can't get this goddamn video shit off the ground. Mm-hmm. But I'm playing free time, sitting on my ass up here. Maybe we'll get it going. All right, buddy.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, man, you betcha. Be good. Take care of yourself.
All right. You too, buddy.
All right.
The Boogie Monster.
Network.